You're listening to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. And welcome to episode 5 of the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series qualifier. This is Chris Young speaking, and today we have Toby Nathan.
Trolls.
And James White.
Hello, everyone.
And the guest host for today is Dave Margetson.
Hey.
Hello, guys. So, thank you for tuning in again for another episode of Four Loonies Talk Pollocks. So what have we got on the agenda for you today? We're going to go through a bit of news. We then got updates on the events, although we will give you an update on the events, but you do need to get on the website and check out your local ones because they are all selling out very fast. We're then going to get some battle reports from Dave with his recent qualifying for the second national place. We also had Toby go to a little steamroller that happened in York, so he keeps banging on about it, so we'll give him a bit of time to talk about it. And then finally we've got a topic to today, which is this the year of the battle engine?
So and cloud war,
battle engine and cloud wars. I'm pretty sure that's the Crucible Guard picture, isn't it, where the clouds are the wheels. Pretty sure Pagani said that's actually what they ride on clouds. So talking
about
that was a wonderful segue there, which we accidentally ran into. Crucible Guard spoilers. Have we all been listening to the podcast, watching the streams and everything?
Yep.
And
Mostly.
Well, one other thing, we won't go into the actual specifics, because although there is stats out there, I'm sure you've seen them, and I'm sure by the time anything important gets to them, they would have changed anyway. But it looks like it is the faction of the debuff, not just from the casters, but from the army. They all seem to have ice cages here and rust there, and there was talk of a poison. So I'll go to our co-host first, Dave. What are your first thoughts about a faction that is focused around troop-based debuffing? Not quite crits, because that all comes from the caster, but actually from the army itself.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be quite good. I think the grenades that said about doing ice cage seem really strong, but I'm not sure how that's going to play out.
But then, they're in AoE, aren't they, as well?
Yeah, so you don't even, it's just on hit, it's not direct hit. So if that stays the same, that seems really strong, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think definitely the CID is going to come about where are they too powerful but easy to kill, so that balances them out, or will they make them slightly less powerful but make them a bit easier to keep alive on the table? Because I'd imagine, although they say a unit of Gormans, that Gorman himself normally is kept alive by being far away until he's needed. But if these are there trying to gauge the front, I'd imagine they'd be quite easy to kill. So, James, what are your thoughts on it anyway? Because you're usually buffing your own stuff. So what are your thoughts if suddenly these come along and debuff everything?
Well, I always get worried when I hear spoilers, because you're always a bit like, oh God, how's that going to work against me? And I think it's very much the worry that it will be like Crix, and hearing them talk about -8, you know, armor debuffs, you always get a little bit scared that it's going to be, you know, that kind of thing again, and it's going to be like the Denny 1 experience. But you just have to wait and see. I mean, it's all going to go through CID, so we'll find out eventually.
Yeah. I think one of the things, just on the mention of that, the thing I like about the way it sounds is that although their stuff seems to, and the way they presented it, is that it's their troops and stuff that will do a lot of debuffing, I kind of think that works the other way around, so they can always have the right tool against you. But for example, there was something about one of the jacks that does poison on constructs. If you've got a lot of constructs, you know that's going to be the key piece. So I think it would be really cool tactically to, you know, for you to know which pieces are going to be working against you. So for example, rust won't do much against the living army, but mortar thing will do lots against the living army. So yeah. And Toby, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think from a design perspective, I think it's really intriguing, because if they're going to have it is that they have all these kind of stacked debuffs and they can go to these kind of ridiculous arm debuffs, death debuffs, all that kind of stuff, then it means that they have to be on the lower end, you know, of the unmodified base power and stuff like that. So they're going to have this weird kind of dichotomy between them having all the tools available, but when you kill stuff, they're going to fall off, and actually it's going to be kind of a real kind of boom or bust faction. So when they, I think I'd be really curious to look at the point costs of stuff, because if stuff is quite expensive because it's got all these fantastic array of options, they're going to be a real kind of specialist faction that can have loads of kind of answers, like you said, to most matchups. But actually, when you take out the pieces, they're really going to start falling apart. And I think that's going to be really interesting to be seen on the table. I think that's a really quite new and novel way of a kind of an army that we haven't seen before.
And obviously as well, like we talk about them being specialists, so, you know, these things are good against Horde, these are against War Machine. Generally, the two limited factions we've seen both like to operate in ADR probably more than any other factions in the game, because they've got such a limited number of casters. So yeah, I think totally that's going to play really in their favour.
Yeah, I think on one of the interviews they were saying that, I think it was the chain attack one, they were saying, Will Hungerford was saying that he thinks about champions a lot. So I don't know whether they're kind of getting these kind of factions that like ADR, and they're trying to think of ways to get, you know, champions in a good format for the future is something they want to push. Because I do think there's a lot of exploration in champions format with the limited casters, because it instantly gets rid of, it's like themes did for armies, champions does for factions. You know, you instantly have this complete meta focus change every 6 months or every year or however they do it. But obviously it's not an easy thing to make up. So so before we move on, anyway, any additional thoughts on the crucibles or effects to your army that might happen through the crucible?
I just thought the kind of general aesthetic actually looks really cool. So seeing the heavy infantry, you know, seeing some of the casters, I'm quite excited to see the rest of the artwork and the models.
And obviously, as a troll player, bring on all the continuous fire and continuous corrosion effects, because I'm not really that bothered.
And playing a bit of Legion, it seems there might be quite a bit of immune to fire, so that'll be interesting to see how that affects them.
I think I'm just going to have to hit things with a stick, I'd imagine.
As long as they can't take the derp turtle, I'll be fine.
Right, so what we'll do then is we'll move on. So some of the events coming up now, unfortunately, because, well, or fortunately in this regard, because you guys out there have really started to take to the Super Series format, a lot of the events are actually sold out. But obviously just check them, see if there's any opportunities, get on reserve lists. And I'll just read through the ones that are happening. So next weekend we have in Northampton on the 12th of February. We then have on the 24th of February at the Outpost for the Northeast qualifier. We have the second Welsh qualifier at Firestorm Games on the 3rd of March. And then there is the Northwest qualifier on the 17th of March, and there's also a London Cross Gaming qualifier on the 17th of March. So, guys, is there anything additional for those? Any of these details?
You order those in order of difficulty, with the most difficult going last.
I just kind of did them in interest, you see. I should have put the Northwest one there first, then, shouldn't I? Oh, that backfired. Yeah, so I think you were saying, Toby, that the cross gaming one is sold out currently. So obviously, get on reserve lists. They never know, they might be able to extend it and things like that if they show you the interest. So obviously, thank you very much for getting on these. And obviously, we want to keep going more besides.
Absolutely.
Right, so we have a guest on today. He is our second qualifier for the national finals. So, Dave, do you want to give a little introduction to yourself about the event and give us an overview of how it all went? We'll jump in with some questions because, obviously, you know, being the qualifier, you must be better than us already.
So, yeah, I play it cross.
Some of us.
I play it cross with Toby, and I play Grimkin at the moment, but I also own Legion, Retribution, and Pigs, but just really enjoying Grimkin. So on that, so the qualifier was at what's it
40k?
Yeah, 40k.
Colchester.
Yeah. And it's a nice place. It's my first time there, and it's loads of parking as well, and it's just off the A12, so it's really easy to get to. And yeah, so I'll jump into my games.
Yeah, go for it.
So my first game was against Bradagus.
Ooh. Actually, do you want to give us a quick overview of the list you took? Obviously, Grimkin.
Oh, yes, of course.
Casters and stuff.
So yeah, I had Dreamer and King of Nothing. My sort of general thinking is Dreamer just seems to handle almost anything quite well. So it's normally my go-to list.
And at all comers.
Yeah. And then I've got King of Nothing for if I worry I'm going to get, if they've got long linear threat ranges, so I either Cloud Wall, or if there's lots of infantry, I find that his personal Arcana is good at removing infantry. So, yeah, that's the general thinking behind my list. I ended up actually only playing Dreamer, so it's
his
just
Arcana's
how...
When you kill a beast, then it does a D3 leaps or something, is that right?
Yeah, the attacking model takes D3, and then D3 nearest models take D3 damage.
So just before you jump into the games, our last conversation was talking about the meta and about local meta and stuff like that. So when you were going there, did you have an idea who would be there, and did you dictate your list in any way based on that?
No, I had no idea. I always find it quite exciting going to other metas because three of my games were against factions that we don't have regular players for at our club, so it was quite interesting to see them.
You find it quite easy going outside to other metas being from London?
Not always. Like, I find the main thing I found was just that the list seemed to be really strong, and I found a lot in Mark III that everyone's a bit more on a level playing field, since like I think pre-measuring has sort of shut lots of those gaps that you used to have.
I definitely think there's a lot more variety. Do you know when you kind of travel about, you see all these kind of different lists, whereas it tend to be a bit more kind of archetypal before, and that seems to have gone away somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was the thing. There was definitely one list that I'll get to that I'd never seen, never heard of, and was quite shocked by how strong it was.
And how many players were at the event?
I think it was either sold out at 16, but I think there were some drops on the day, so it was down to 14, I think.
And was it a pretty even spread in terms of kind of hordes and War Machine, or?
I think there was more War Machine, I think. There was Retribution, Signar, another Grimkin player, two Cricks, and just a spread of some others, I think.
Oh, interesting. Well, should we get into your first round then?
Yeah, so it was against Bradagus, and this variant was three Walled Guardians, four Walled Watchers, and he had two units of the Mannequins. And it was an interesting game because I considered King of Nothing, and then when I got into it, I just thought I was glad I didn't, because it had a 14-inch threat range that it didn't need line of sight for, because obviously the feet plus the teleport tech. So I just played Dreamer. I ended up just shuffling forward and just putting loads of stuff in front of my beasts, really. And it was quite... I couldn't use Enfeeble or Abyssal Gate because of Mystic Wards. So it was quite a tough game. It was not... When you play Dreamer, you've got quite a lot of control of the board, and I just didn't feel like I had that at all against Bradagus, because I had to let him alpha me. I had to let him... He completely dictated the game.
Okay, so Bradagus is... I mean, for people that might not know, Bradagus is having a real resurgence at the moment, and it's kind of one of these things that no one really talks about. And Circle are making a bit of a comeback based on the back of how Bradagus is doing. But you might not know that unless you've got a local player that plays Bradagus. Do you have someone in London that plays? Did you know what to expect?
No, so I've not played against Bradagus since Mark II, and I knew about the changes, but I had no idea that he was popular again. And the other thing that threw me off as well is the whole army was magical weapons. So the Gremlin swarms and Dreamer's own protection just wasn't that good. So it was one of those situations where I felt like if I had something like Child or someone who's a little bit more just outright a powerhouse rather than a control caster. Yeah, because it just felt like Dreamer wasn't contributing a lot except for casting Manifest Destiny every turn.
Pretty nice contribution though, Dave.
Yeah, it's still really good. But yeah, in the end, it actually went to turn 7 and I just slowly got ahead on scenario, keeping Gremlin Swarms just 14 inches away from the things I need to contest and then just ran them in as I needed to. He ended up with, I think he had one heavy left at the end and I was on 2. But yeah, so it was quite a close game still. Like, I think if there was more time on attrition, and I would say the one thing that it just really sort of opened my eyes to was just that there was a lot there, and it was a lot of remove from play, and I wasn't getting the corpses I needed, and so I just think Bradagus is good into Grimkin.
I mean, I don't think you're the only person that wouldn't have expected Bradagus at a tournament if you hadn't seen it, like in your local meta. It's been quite surprising because we have a local player that plays it as well, and it's been very surprising to see it. But I think it's leading to maybe a slew of like Mark II powerhouse casters coming back, like Harby's making a comeback secretly, and we've also got Scar One. He's making big strides recently, so I think there's a big amount of Mark II power casters coming back.
Yeah, I mean, not to derail it too much, but I do think there is a bit of that. We saw it with like Una and stuff like that, where people take a hit, and in some cases, like you mentioned with the Harpy and stuff like that, it was that move to Mark III, and everyone was like, oh, they're awful, not looking at them, and then all it takes is just someone having a play, giving it a go, realizing that what they're playing into now isn't what they were playing into 6 months ago, and that actually the tools that those casters have is pretty useful. So,
spot on. Dave, sorry for derailing it. Carry on for us.
That's fine. So I'll go on to my next game now, which was against Krix, and that was the Denny 1 Satixis theme.
Is this post-nerf?
Yeah, so again, we've not got a regular Krix player, so it's another thing that I played a very cautious game because I hadn't played against Denny 1 in a long time. So I just, in all my games, I opted to go second because I'm really finding a lot of advantage with going second.
It's interesting. I was finding myself always wanting to be going first this weekend.
That's because you're trolls, Toby.
Yeah, what I'm often finding is that if I go first, they start scoring first and they can get ahead a bit. Whereas with Grimkin, I always know that I'm probably going to take a charge. So I just keep moving up and moving up. I don't have to worry about being alphaed because I know it's probably going to happen anyway.
Yeah, I think just from the Grimkin perspective as well, a lot of the games you see, Grimkin can go to turn 7. They're the kind of army that can survive that long. So turn 7 means I'm going second means that your opponent has their last turn, and you then have whatever clock is remaining to figure out how you win. Whereas if you've got more of a fragile army that's not going to go to turn 7, then I suppose you kind of, the turn based could be either way. As long as you're going to get the points to win, then you're fine. Whereas, as you said, if you can get to that turn 7 and then pip those points on the last turn, then you can win it out that way.
Yeah, so this was another one that ended up going to turn 7, and there was almost an early assassination where I purposely put a Gorehound in charge range of one of the Stalkers, but I put him right out on the flank because I just wanted one of the Stalkers out of it because I didn't want to have grievous wounds on my beasts. And he went for that and then had to finish it off with Denny. I triggered all fall down, so then Denny was knocked down. And then that really messed up his turn because he played a really cautious thing trying to surround her. And then when I measured it, I was out anyway. So it just really threw him off, and in the end I just ground him out because all my heavies were in range of at least two arcane vortexes, so there was never a chance for him to parasite, so I was never going to get that low armor.
So the swing's not going to be enough, so he's going to have to blow his feet to try and get some of them.
Yeah, so he needed to feet, and then even then, like Satixis, they go under the feet. If you, they would go up to power 13, which against 21 is on three dice, doesn't break that hard, but he's unlikely to kill the heavies. But again, there was another time where my gremlin swarms didn't do as well as I wanted, because Denny herself can remove them, and he had the Devil Shadow, the Merc unit, the undead pirate guys, and one of them's got magical and either sight, so again I just kept my gremlin swarms 14 inches away from the zone and just threw one in every turn, and if I made one of the phantasms I put one of them in instead.
You're just going to kind of drag out the scenario play till turn 7?
Yeah, and that's what happened. Like, three of my games this weekend went to turn 7, sorry.
I guess with the kind of high impact casters like Denny or your Haley 2s, with the ability to kind of delay and drag out a scenario to a much longer game, then it means there's just by the fact that there's more turns, that those other turns are going to be less impactful.
Yeah. So the one this was the one that shocked me the most was against Haley 1, and it was in the Gunmage theme. And I'd never heard of it or seen it. And it was Hurricane, double Gunmage unit, double Gunmage solos, both the, both the rifle ones and the other ones. And then it had Black 13th, the Gunmage horses, and Falk.
Dave?
Yeah.
Just to confirm, this was an event that you played the other day. This, you're not talking about one from back in Mark 2?
No, this was Mark 3.
So you played against Bradagus and then played against Haley 1?
Yep.
What is this madness?
Yeah, so I, again, it was another thing that I was never seen, so I didn't really know what to do. So it's just a cautious advance, completely brick up, and against Signar, I normally do Dreamer, a layer of Krabbits, and then my heavies, knowing that he had Shadowfire to hope that he can't get to my caster. And so he ended up feeting with Haley, and it just hit way harder than I was expecting, because Falk has that spray that rune marks, and that gives +2 damage to all magical weapons, and every gun in his army was magical except the Colossal. So suddenly he's got all these power 12s, and he dead-eyed two of them. And then I think the weakness in the list is only that you're fishing for crits, but he ended up knocking down probably most of my army. Like, he knocked down two of my heavies, three of my Krabbits, and my light. And the light he knocked down, he took out the spirit because he gets 4 deadly shots, and he can take out 12 damage on any column he wants.
And they have like Weapon Master as well when they're in melee or something.
Yeah, so that's something that came in later. So the first turn that he feated, he killed a Skin and Moans. He did left the Rattler on 2 health, and then he killed something else, so then I sacrificed, and then he tried to kill the Rat. That's when he removed the spirit from the Rattler. So if he would have played that better, he would have taken out a Skin and Moans and my Rattler, and he half-healthed my Krabbits. So there was a lot there that did just a ton of damage, and I just didn't think, because after that, I then had nothing that could really get to his stuff. So then when the Black 13th charged in the turn after, they get 4 dice, and it, all the stuff, it just really hurts. And I think Falk is the thing that really pushes it over the edge, because he used my there was a cloud in the middle of the table, but he used my battle engine as a targeting point to shoot through the cloud to hit my heavies.
Don't the gun mages, they've got a mini feat, haven't they, kind of true sight now, is that right?
Yeah, so all the gun mages have it, but I think the biggest turning point of the game was when he did the double, he did double Deadeye on both units of gun mages. He didn't have anything left to stop me enfeebling the Colossal, and I think he underestimated how much an enfeebled Colossal hurts, because when it's got -2 to attack and damage rolls, it just becomes pretty useless. And I think if he'd just held, probably put one less focus on him, I think that would have completely changed the game.
How so?
Well, because it meant that that turn that he went to do stuff with Colossal, it just put out no damage, and that's a turn where it could have probably killed off the other Skinnamones.
Hayley Wan's got Arcane Vortex, hasn't she? I think that's the thing we're missing.
Yeah, yes. Because she can take spells.
And kept it safe.
Yeah. But yeah, like the feat turn, as I said, it's just you've got each unit of gun mages has got 14 shots, and obviously with that many you're going to get some crits, some are going to be knocked down, some he did some thunderbolts to push stuff back, and against I think anyone other than Grimkin, I think a lot of armies would struggle against it. The only things that will prey hard on it is stuff with lots of AoEs, like probably the Kador rockets and stuff like that would just annihilate it.
But I guess also the Falk +2 is only against one model, right? He doesn't get to shoot. I suppose on the feet turn, he shoots at a time, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's two times, and it's a spray, so it does hit multiple things if he positions well.
Okay, cool. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, so it really stacks up the damage, and yeah, I just think it's a really good list, and it's surprising that no one else has really looked at it, but he said that he posts on the Signar page and everyone just thinks he's crazy, but I think it was good. I really rate it.
Awesome. I mean, that's the thing. It only takes like one person to play something well and then everyone else will fall in line.
Yeah.
So that took you into the finals, did it, Dave?
Yep. And that's when I came up against Bradagus again.
So there was Bradagus in what event?
Yep.
Right, so just before you go any further, when you first described Bradagus, you spoke about him having lots of RFP. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right. Can you? I understand why, but can you explain to our listeners why that's a problem when you play Grimkin?
So the biggest problem is often if you want to trigger your Arcana, because getting corpses, it helps, but I don't think it's the most essential thing. But stuff like Sacrifice, which is probably their biggest Arcana, can't be triggered if they RFP, and also Ill Omens, I believe the other one I take quite often, can't be triggered if they RFP.
It's why Band of Heroes is good, isn't it?
Yeah, so it changes sometimes what you need to do with your Arcana. This one he only had 2 of the Watchers, so it wasn't so bad for remove from play, but it's still, I tried to shield guard all those shots onto the Krabbits. And also,
it seems to me that the Bradagus list is quite cool because it can be built in so many different ways. So you were saying that you played 2 Bradagus players, but it sounds like their lists were quite different. And I think that speaks to kind of good design if you can have 2 different lists that are really viable so you can build in a couple of ways.
Yeah, so the first one had 3 Guardians, whereas this one only had 1. But then it had 3 Wold Wardens, the tall, lankier ones, and then 2 Watchers and 2 Whites.
They're the Geomancer ones, aren't they? I suppose if he's trying to push for to kind of synergy, stupid synergy chains, or he's going for a more balanced versatile list.
Yeah.
Because all the Wardens can still slam people out of zones. They've got the combo smite, haven't they? Plus he's got Battering Ram as a spell, so you can really move stuff out of the zones, and with the line of sight blocking, I think they're really versatile.
Yeah, I think it's the Geomancy does make a big difference, like on when he was going to move in, when I was doing my usual thing of screening my beasts with just bodies, he was using the Geomancy to clear the path and then get him in. So it was it gives you a lot of versatility having the walled wardens instead. So
if I play Turtle, I'd definitely be going kind of and playing some Bradagus. I think he seems really cool.
Yeah. So what ended up happening in this game was I went for Dreamer again because knowing I played it once and then finding out that King of Nothing definitely wouldn't have worked, I just thought it has to be Dreamer. Dropped her, went second again, and just moved up slowly, and he wasn't giving me anything to kill. He 100% knew my threat, and he wasn't going to... He knew that he was going to alpha me, so I, in the end, just advanced both my Cage Rages into his threat and just kept the Skin and Bones back, because the Cage Rages are more likely to kill. I think they've got in the region of 32 boxes, and then they start at the armor 21. And the Walled Wardens get to power 21 if they're fully buffed. So it would be straight dice on the damage. And
so, sorry to interrupt, Dave. Did he use his feet to alpha you then? Did he use the slot?
Yeah. Yeah, so he feated, and then that was the other thing I forgot about the feat, is that you get the move back at the end if you want.
So and you thought you'd baited him out, and then he was like, I'm off.
Yeah, so one of them he didn't come up that far with. He just moved up for a Geomancy, and I thought, oh, I can probably get multiple heavies, and then that one went back, and I was like, oh, actually, I can't get that. But so I think the turning point of that game was... I moved into his threat, and he then went to clear stuff. He failed to clear one side because I had three shield guards around one Dreadrought, so he kept trying to kill this Dreadrought to create space to get in, and just kept shield guarding the shots, and he ended up running out of shots to be able to get in there. And then when he was on the final shot, I toughed, so he couldn't get in one side. And prior to that, the first move he did was kill a Gremlin Swarm that was contesting his flag. And I triggered Ill Omens off that. So then the Cage Rages go up to effectively armor 22.
Because of the minus one, minus one.
Yeah, minus one, minus one. And I think what he should have done, knowing that that was his first attack, his first activation, was just held out another turn. Just killed the thing that was contesting. Position again, he knows I can't alpha him, and then just hold out and then next turn go in, because I think you can play a longer game against Grimkin. I don't think you have to hit hard, like really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened in a bunch of games, and especially watching people when you watch some of the like the WTC games and some of the players there, is that you kind of watch and then you think, right, everything's going to happen, and then the following turn just nothing happens.
Yeah,
what's going on? Have I missed a turn? Are they still on the same turn? And it's really that kind of that discipline of, yes, you can hit them, but actually, when is the best time to go in, and when is the time to actually go, you know what? What I'm going to do is just give you one person to contest the zone, and then I'm going to let your feet ride out, and then I'm going to come in and do it again, or vice versa. So yeah, that's one of the things that you tend to see people when they really get their head into the game, is they start realizing when not to hit, not just when to hit. So.
Absolutely, it's all about overcommitting, and I think it's one of the things that like people learn as they get very, very good at this game, is just, it doesn't matter if we don't fight for four turns, or if, you know, I kill one thing and you kill one thing and the whole army's just sit back. Like, overcommitting is one of these key stratagems that make you a much better player. And often, do I need to commit? What am I getting in return? What will they kill?
Yeah, it's like when you learn that you can move backwards as well as forwards. Like, everyone just assumes you have to keep going forwards, where actually sometimes the best thing to do is back off.
Yeah, that it was on that turn prior to moving in. I think I only moved about 2 inches. I just and actually moved the Skin and Bones back because I didn't want them to be killed. And it was sort of knowing what he could take out and sort of dictating the game based on that. And what ended up happening was the Warden went in, and it was ended up being minus one on the dice. And after taking the power 23 that the World Guardian could do, I found myself sort of thinking, oh, he's only power 21. That's not as bad as I thought, which seems quite crazy.
Hello, fisted.
Yeah. And then I think he rolled bad, but he only did about half its life. And then I just took out three heavies from there. And then that moment, he knew that he sort of had to play for an assassination. And Dreamer was further forward than I would have liked because she was sort of stuck because of where I had the cart. So she ended up moving sideways a little bit, and then I moved the cart in front.
To block line of sight?
Yeah, just completely block her out. And also the other consideration was there was one heavy that I half-healthed, and moving the death knell in stopped it from healing. So I'd killed three heavies and stopped one from having spirit or mind, I think it was.
Nice. So how did you close out the game then?
So then what happened was I was like, well, I still don't think he can get to me. And he was playing his turn and he killed the corpse cart. And I thought, oh, well, this looking like Bradagus can only shoot. Like, how is he going to get to me? And then he used one set of stones to teleport another one. So then Bradagus was in the set of stones. And
that's
then I was like,
cool.
Oh, that's how he's going to get to me. But just prior to that, so I was on one transfer and he decided to kill my Cage Rager. I think he said he was playing for points and then realized he gave me three more transfers. And I had dodge up. And what happened was he's then knew rather than being able to do fully boosted attacks, he had to just roll all six attacks unboosted and hope that two of them is enough to kill me and none miss. So he rolled the first attack and it was double one and I dodged out and then I just killed Bradagus. So
nice.
Yeah, if he would have just not killed that Cage Rager, he would have been able to boost a hit and I think he would have had me. But it's very likely because he's mat 9 power 16 against defense 15 armor 14. So
you need a bit of luck sometimes, don't you?
Yeah, it was just unfortunate. I think it was that it was killing that Cage Rager because there was no reason for him to do it, but it just made a big difference.
So you win that game and you close it out, and then you've qualified as the second person to get to the UKIS 2018 finals in November. Are you excited, Dave?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm still going to the one of the events at Cross.
So, you've got a dream crush, haven't you, really?
Yeah, you've got to take some people out. But I think what I might do for that is just have a little bit of a play around with some other stuff, like Legion CID might be out by then. I might try a few things and see whether I'll take Grimkin in November or whether I'll switch to Legion.
And just one last question. So you played the Dreamer for four times.
Yeah.
When you go, and you said you're going to take a break from Grimkin soon. But if you go back, are you going to try a different pair, or do you think that the games in which you wanted to play the King of Nothing just didn't present themselves, and you're still going to have that as your pair, or are you going to mix it up a little bit?
Yeah, I was playing around with straight after I started building lists for Child because I thought that Bradagus is such a big threat that I was like, I'd feel much more comfortable knowing that Child buffs my own stuff, so I haven't got to affect his, so it's a lot easier to play out the games. But I think the biggest thing that I love about playing Dreamer is that she Manifest Destiny just means that most of the time you haven't got a roll to hit, you can just keep rolling under Signs Importance and you just make the attacks normally. Like, it makes a big difference.
With the tantrum ability and abuse, does that out-threat Bradagus and the Walls?
It can do. Tantrum, he's got to hurt one of your beasts within command range of Child, which is only 5. But if you shield guard on, you can effectively get it to a 8-inch range. Then you match his threat, I think, because you get up to 14 inches.
Don't forget the cheeky shield guard to shield guard.
Yeah, that's another one.
Oh, you can shield guard, shield guard, shield guard, shield guard, so you can have a chain.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, I think the King of Nothing, I do really like him, but I never feel quite in control of the games. It feels like right on the edge because I don't take the battle engine. It's more, he's just he's very sort of squishy caster, and there's a lot that he can do. And yeah, so it's hard to know when to drop him because he can get shot off the table quite easily, which a lot of Grimkin can't.
Fair enough. Well, congratulations, Dave. And
thank you.
As you said, do some dream crushing. This is your opportunity now, if they let you in, to try and take out some rivals to make sure they don't qualify for you when you get to the national stage. And maybe if you guys are out there, you're gonna have to keep an eye out for Dave because he might travel and start dream crushing elsewhere. Maybe.
Just a quick question for Dave. Dave, do you think you play better in a solo format than a team event?
So far that's proved to be true. Like when I went to ETC, I did really bad, but I don't know if it's just, I think that Grimkin has come on really well for me, and I think Legion have come on really well for me recently. I think previously when I was playing Retribution, I was doing well for a while, but then I've not taken to them well at all in Mark III.
Who was your captain at the ETC, out of interest?
Oh, that was Toby.
Oh, well, I mean, I think that's probably your problem, to be honest. Like, poor leadership.
Yeah, poor direction is obviously going to, you know, send you in the wrong direction. So, yeah, not good. So
I made the wrong cuts.
So, well, thank you very much for running through that for with us. As we did say, we'd give him a couple of minutes to talk about it because it's all he's been talking about. Toby, I believe you might have played some War Machine over the weekend as well.
I did. I was lucky enough to go to the Invitational in York, put on by York War Games Club. And it's an event. This is the second year they've run it, I think. Fantastic event. They look at kind of people who've placed highly a lot across a kind of broad range of tournaments over the past year and the WTC guys, and invite them up to play in a tournament. Really good practice. And also the top two players qualify for the WTC England team. So really excited, really good opportunity to go and have some really good high quality games. And it was a really, really well run event. The kind of standard of play was really good, was really clean, really friendly. And I think once you've got to that kind of level, like the games are just so much more fun, because once you've taken out the kind of anxiety, the worry, you know, that making sure that people are doing things properly and cleanly, you can just kind of concentrate on just enjoying the kind of strategic game that you're playing and kind of and working out ways to win. So I went up there. It was run over 2 days, so we had two games on the Saturday and three games on the Sunday. I took Trolls because that's all I play. I took the Madrak 1 list in the Band of Heroes, which is a really kind of strong list. It's more geared towards playing into hordes, because I've been getting smashed quite a lot by Scorn, Siege Adamantrax, and I think the combination of the even ground and the champs being naturally high death, and you can spread the damage around. So if he's got turtles, there's a turn that he can't charge you. He can't knock you down to auto hit you, so he has to spend all his rage tokens trying to boost a hit. And even then, I don't think he's got the ability to kind of fight through that. And then the champs can kill him quite handily. So that was the kind of tech to try and bait out any Scorn drops. And it's just generally quite good if people haven't got a way to boost to hit or to debuff them, or like massed shooting. The Band of Heroes list is just really strong. And I paired that with Colgrimmar in Power of Dunia, which, I mean, Colgrimmar's such a versatile and interesting caster. You can play with so many, you know, different kind of army variants. I know Andy Garado was there this weekend, was playing her in Storm of the North, and I think that's a really, really good list, and with a Glacier King. But one thing I'd wanted to try was her in Power of Dunia with Mulg as an Arcanode, because the theory being that she can play into most gun lines. I think she can play into most stuff, actually. She can play into most gun lines, and she's got a really strong assassination if you're going to be playing against War Machine casters, because of the ability to get Mulg
places because he's incredibly hardy and he's the Arknode. And the spray is just so powerful because it's magical. It's a spray, so it kind of ignores stealth, it ignores cover. The only thing you've got to worry about is the kind of getting line of sight through terrain. So unless they're hiding behind a wood, but then you just kind of trample through it or trample over it. It's just really strong at killing a lot of the squishier War Machine casters that people are playing. So the control casters that you tend to struggle against if you're playing trolls. And yeah, really, really good. Had a fantastic game against Clarkey, who I think is from your neck of the woods, isn't he, James?
Yeah, he's from Stafford, just down the road from us at Warsaw, yeah. So he's pretty close. He comes down quite often.
Yeah. Jonathan Clark, really good player. He had a Kador list. He had Vlad 1 Rockets, and I dropped Cold Grimmer into that, which I thought, which probably was actually an advantage to me, because there was the cloud wall, which he can't see through, and then there's a turn of him not being able to shoot if I can catch him in the feet. Another good example of once you've played a game, then if you replay it again, I think you approach it differently. But he played fantastically well, and we had a really good chat afterwards, and he was saying as soon as he knew it was Cold Grimmer, his list was quite interesting. He was playing Vlad Rocket Package, but with two gun carriages. So it gives him a lot of kind of mobility to move around and to kind of wipe out infantry and stuff. And I knew that I couldn't drop Madrak into that. So I dropped the Cold Grimmer list. He knew they had to kind of go wide, which is what he did. Went wide, outflanked me. I tried at one point, I think the attrition was going badly. I left a battle engine on one box on one of the turns. And then he just played really well, chipped away at me, spread wide enough that I couldn't catch as much stuff in my feet, positioned just out of line of sight. He just played a really tight game. And it came down to, I had to try this kind of slightly janky assassination with a Mauler throwing a Marauder at Vlad to try and knock him down, and missed me boosted 10. So I wasn't able to then get him, and then he won. So that was the first game. And then the second game I played against captain of the England Knights, really nice fella, was dressed as a farmer, which was a bit weird, Jake Wilstrop, and he was playing Haley 3. So I've played this game before. I played this when I went to ClogCon. So I know Madrak can play into it, and I actually think my build of Madrak won because of the shield guards. I think he can't shoot out enough stuff before the champs come through and just chew him to pieces. And there's enough kind of magic weapons and things like that that I can strip it down. So I wanted to play the Cold Grimmer list into him. And it was a rather anticlimactic Mulg trampled into the cloud wall and then sprayed Haley down, which is exactly the kind of maths that I'd been looking for to end those games. And it's a really nasty threat, and also it's pretty hard to stop because inevitably the Haley 3 players tactical supremacy out of the cloud wall, so it gives you a nice space to just go into the cloud wall and then spray from, because they want to have the echoes being relevant, and to be relevant in command they're usually within 10 of where Mulk can be. So that was day one, finished well. And then day two, played Mike Sherlock. He had Osram and Texas, ended up dropping Osram, and I dropped Cold Grimmer again, just because I thought there's lots of guns. I thought the Osram list, with all those charging weapon masters, might be able to break down Madrak, and I wanted to try it as well. So that was a really, really, really good game, interesting game. Came down to me being too concerned about definitely killing a battle engine and putting rage on Mulg when I should have put a cloud in front of myself, which would have made myself not seen. So I got Cold Grimmer killed there. And then the last two games, I played Zarl as the last game, which was against Konrad Kolicki. And that was Madrak into that. And that was, it was just too hard for him to A, get at me, get through the feet, break the Death 16 stuff. So that was a scenario win. I think it's just a bad matchup for him, really. Zarl won the Immortals into that. And the middle game was against John Lavender, who played Old Witch 3. So the Kador one. I don't know if that's... Is that 2 or 3?
That's 2.
Yeah, so the Old Witch with a load of jacks. And that one, I think I played really well. I played Cold Grimmer into that. Played a really good scenario game, which is something I learned this weekend. I think her scenario, the push is phenomenal. So there'd be matchups where you're playing it, and the feat in terms of stripping ranged attacks is really strong. But then there's a lot of the time the push enables like a really strong scenario play, especially with the clouds as well. I've not actually encountered it where the Pathfinder or the Eyeless Sight is particularly impactful. But definitely the stripping, the pushing them, sorry, and stripping the shooting has been really good all weekend, I think. So, yeah, and managed to kind of push his jacks out and get up on scenario and win. So fantastic event, fantastic game and weekend of gaming, and managed to go 3-2 in the end, which made me 9th overall, which I was really pleased with.
Good stuff, good stuff. So are we hoping next year get some qualifiers and get back there?
I think so. I mean, I would recommend anyone has the opportunity to go. It's a really good event, and it raised a load of money to kind of go towards the WTC, which I'd like to, it seems fantastic the way that Phil and the other guys have kind of made it on, and kind of just really supporting the event and kind of building it. Like, it's, and Rich, obviously, so everyone on the committee is doing a fantastic job. James, I think you're on the committee as well, aren't you? Yeah, I think it's been fantastically promoted, I think, this year.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we're running a bit long, but we will just get into the last section there. So, Toby, you wanted to discuss this, some of your findings for this year?
Yeah, it was just more of a reflection, really. I remember a couple of episodes ago, we'd each said, you know, what do we think is going to happen in the year, all this kind of stuff. And one thing that I think is going to be big, or is big already, and I didn't really appreciate it before I went to this tournament, was the PP, their intent, they said, wasn't it, was to have battle engines in kind of most list pairs. And I think they've achieved that. I think there's so many really, really good battle engines out that one of the things you're starting to have to do is to think about what's your strategy when faced with these, you know, speed 7-8 monstrosities that have kind of really good shooting that you can't block in a lot of the time, have really high armor and high boxes. I was just really surprised actually to see so many of them. There was lots of Kador double battle engine, the Stormstride is good, the double seed Adamantrax is already kind of a pretty standard list that lots of people play and consider. I was just wondering if you guys had seen many of them about.
I definitely saw a lot when we were over in Conquest in Norway, and actually inspired one of our club mates to be running the Dracodile with Targ, so that he can blind two of them a turn, because blind is one of the best like solutions to battle engines, especially.
Oh wow, because the ancillary attack, that's pretty good tech, isn't it?
Except against Siege Manthraxes, because they have the poop handler that can just remove it.
That's fair.
Just this has come up in our club. We've discussed that when we were like, brilliant, let's just blind them, of which then the poop handler, who is giving them the magical guided attacks anyway, just removes it. Because Scorn, obviously, underpowered.
Yeah. I don't think it has any weaknesses, does it?
I don't think so, no. I think that's the problem, it's so well-rounded.
I mean, it's not a TEP, is it?
I actually genuinely think it's better than the TEP. I say that from because I've started playing Convergent, so I've been using the TEP. And I think the TEP is still, if the TEP can get into the circumstances it wants to do, it's fantastic. I think where the TEP struggles is against dedicated high armor and boxes. Because it can't really take down a lot of boxes. It can absolutely do over something that's just high armor and not many boxes, but when it comes to like heavies, it will take off say half a heavy, but then won't be able to finish it off. Whereas a Manthrax with like Rasheth and stuff like that, I've seen one of them just go in and wreck one heavy and start working down on a second one. And its threat, the fact that it's got the reposition and things like that, means that it's actually able to keep itself safe from those kind of things, whereas the TEP is limited to the 10-inch threat. Once it's got that spray, it has to move away. Not to say the TEP isn't great, it totally is, but as I say, I think, you know, these things, and I think that's maybe what Toby's saying, is that it used to be the only battle engine you really feared was the TEP, and then in more recent times, the Wraith engine. Through all the Crix debuffs and stuff, but now I am definitely seeing a lot more of them appearing everywhere.
I mean, that annoyed by the race engine, actually. I think it's overrated. I think it's a good piece, but, like, meh. It's only got 3 attacks. Like, I think like you were saying, like, the thing about the Adamantrax that's so effective is, yes, it's got a ridiculous melee weapon that can hit you and knock you down, so then it can just buy attacks on you, but it can also trample. It's ridiculously fast. It's got a gun that, for some reason, is good at hitting and damaging the bigger you are. Like, it's just absurd how many rules it has. And it also ignores stuff because it's not a construct, because it's a living beast or whatever. Ugh. Anyway, Dave, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to mention as well that I've seen the tournament I was at, someone was running the double Retribution battle engine. With Thyron. Yeah, so I think the idea behind that is he's got Spellpiercer, and that potentially gives you 4 knockdown shots a turn, or 4 fully, I think it's boosted damage, power 16s. Yeah. So it can hit quite hard. And also, I think Legion, another faction where you're seeing some double battle engines.
Oh, definitely. Even, I mean, in our area, just we've definitely seen the double throne in minions. We've been seeing 1 or 2 sacral vaults showing up. I think one of the main things as well for it is, in these scenarios, if we've got any factions where, you know, they've only got 1 or 2 buffs for the battle group on a caster. You've got, and this is definitely the case with the TEP, you can literally have a buff for the TEP, but you can just send the TEP off to a flank and just say, right, you go deal with that, go deal with that flag, you kill whatever's on that side of the table, and I'll deal with this flag, or this zone. And then that actually, I think, is one of the reasons why it's the same with, like, the gun carriages. They're so fast, they can just go off and deal with themselves. They can still be buffed with the science importance, but they don't require that kind of micromanagement in a way, and to be in a bunker. So I think that is especially when you've got things like spread the net, where you want to be getting over to their flag. You know, you can't really, if your jack's all the way over to their flag, that means your caster is most of the time 14 inches away from that jack, which means they're probably in a precarious situation. Whereas a battle engine can just, you know, zoom past their flag and turn around and do what it wants.
Oh, entirely. It's their ability to be kind of like an independent piece from your army that's incredibly hard to remove, and they all have kind of super good rules. And they can't be frozen as well, which is ridiculous.
Indeed. So, I mean, do you think this trend is going to continue, or do you think we're going to see, as it goes on, are we going to see more and more of them? Are people going to have to start throwing in things like your marauders, your, you know, siege weapons rules? The things like the Dracodile, you're starting to see that in there. It sounds like people are starting to change to the meta already. And do you think we'll see them all go away again? Or do you think they are that good, they're just going to stay when you've got that potential? Like it kind of did with some of the Crix answers, you had an answer, but it didn't matter. It just meant you had an even game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be definitely interesting to see how it shakes out. I think the people who are playing them will continue to play them, and then as people see how successful that is and how effective they are. So I think we'll see more of them. I'm not quite sure if it's got to the stage where all the solutions are that apparent. But yeah, no, it's very interesting to see where it'll lead.
If someone can build a list where the meat fresh is quite good, that'd be appreciated as well. I think that's the only one that I'm not regularly seeing. I think every other battle engine I've seen really regularly.
I mean, I think it's a case of, like, everything looks, is, the grass is always greener, isn't it? Because I look at some of the others and I'm like, they're so good. And then I look at the war wagon and the hoot trawler and think, meh, yeah.
I think the war wagon would see play if it was in a better theme.
Are the other battle engines in more well-rounded or regular themes then?
I think some of them, and I know definitely the one thing I've found is the TEP is only limited to one theme list, which is the Jack list. So I don't know whether, and I think that's probably the reasons why I've seen a lot of Convergence players seem to go for double DI, the Destruction Initiative, instead of using legions. So maybe that's it. People are hankering on their teps a bit too much.
Can the I reckon if you could put the War Wagon in Band of Heroes, that'd be quite interesting.
As long as it counted towards 3 points, I absolutely agree. I think it would be really interesting in Power of Dunia as well, which is a lot of the Jack themes let you take the battle engine.
It's more of a thematic push, that one, isn't it? I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I think you, James, has kind of knocked it on the head there as well with the towards 3 points, because it's so tight with certain, getting those certain points and certain support solos, because as much as you say, it's not about the points, because I'm a firm believer that it's got nothing to do with the 3 points in theme list. You could be 20 points ahead, but if it's 20 points of utter drops, it doesn't matter. Go 10 points ahead with actual useful things. But as you said, if you've got those like clutch solos that are going to give your list the abilities that you're after, like we were talking about Fork earlier, that kind of turns on the entire list. You know, if you're not going to be able to get that kind of solo out of it because you're taking a battle engine and it's not contributing, then again, that has to be a really good battle engine to still be taken. So I think that could be part of it as well.
Only time will tell.
Time will tell. Right. So, guys, so that we don't run on too much, is there any last thoughts from you guys? Anything you want to give a shout-out to? Dave, I'll let you have a shout-out if you've got anything local you want to promote.
I don't think so. I'd just say that, I'd say 40k Gaming, like, good venue, and I'd say check it out if you get the chance. Like, yeah. They did free tea and coffee all day, which helps a lot when you're playing a lot of games.
Oh, I'm in. James, anything you need to shout out to?
Yeah, just a quick shout out. Toby mentioned going to the Invitational, and they actually donated all the funds from the event, all the profits, to the England team, which they didn't have to do. We weren't expecting them to do it. And it's going to help the England players get overseas and, you know, make the trip and help us hopefully win. And it's really, really appreciated. So I'd like to say a thanks to Brett Wilkie and the crew up there in York for what they've done.
Definitely. Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
And Toby?
Just a congratulations to the English WCC captains that got announced this last week. So it's Andy, Ryan and Jake. I'm sure they're going to do a fantastic job. If you haven't submitted your application to get on the WCC team England and you were thinking of doing so, you know, make sure you do. It's a fantastic experience, really good event. Get those applications in. I think they finish just after BonesCon, so that's around the 17th, 18th. So you've still got a little bit of time, but you may as well get it done and out of the way rather than a last-minute rush.
Okay, and then from me, I believe some of us are going to BonesCon. So if you want to come up and have a chat, feel free. We're accessible. If you've got any feedback on the episodes or any topics for us to run in the future, do let us know and we'll try and get those done for you. As ever, don't forget, all the information we work to is on the website. So that is wmhukiss.co.uk, and you can get all the information, all the latest details. We'll get them up there as soon as we're told. And also, you can follow us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, and that's all under the WMHUKISS acronym.
Initialism.
I told you we weren't very good at this. But as again said, thank you very much for everyone. That's probably the biggest thing, because we've been talking about it, the fact that these events are starting to actually sell out now, which... as a lover of the game, and I'm sure the guys would say the same, that we have been through a lull with War Machine, and hopefully this is actually starting to, you know, pick things back up. It's going to, given those people that have gone through and know that it's a good game, it's given them something to keep going, and hopefully it will just go from strength to strength, and we'll have this as a yearly thing for everyone. So thank you very much out there, and goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.